Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So what do we have coming up on the show? Well, next half hour, just a few moments, Greg Pickle from PennLive.com. And for the Patriot News, Greg has done extensive work on the initial stage of the concussion lawsuit against college football. We'll talk to him about that. Coming up tomorrow, Dick Girardi at Pimlico in Baltimore from the Preakness. We will talk about the second leg of horse racing's Triple Crown with DJ. He'll be with us at 4:06 tomorrow. 4:35 tomorrow, Scott Fransky, the play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Phillies. Coming up on Monday, Chris Spielman, who just left ESPN, where he's going to be a lead analyst for college football for Fox Sports. And, of course, we are a year and a half away from Fox getting involved with the Big Ten. Chris Spielman, one of the more respected analysts out there, he will join us on the show Monday. Tuesday, John Solomon, CBSSports.com, their lead college football writer. John has done a lot of work on Penn State and also about the Big 12 and the Baylor situation of late. We will talk to John Solomon about that on Tuesday. Wednesday, we have a Phillies game. Thursday, Doug Gottlieb from CBS Sports will join us. And with some cooperation from Kevin Herr, a.k.a. The Suit, I'm sure we can dig up somebody to talk about the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500, even if it's the guy that sweeps the pits. I'm not saying we're desperate on this one, but his help on this one would help. He can make a phone call.
Keeps his foot in the door.
It's the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. We need to have somebody on next week about it. We do. Jerry Punch has been great. Vince Welsh has been great. Sage Karam has been great. These are all people we've had on the show. Well, it's the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. You have to have a guest on from it. So thus, we grovel to the Suit, the king of digital media, because we know he has connections in this area. The other stuff, the Doug Gottliebs, the Chris Spielmans, the Dick Girardis, the Scott Franskys, the John Solms. I mean, I know they're all big names. I got it. But we've been told by management that we have to somehow keep the Suit happy. So we will. Didn't you get that memo?
I did. I screenshot it.
Yes, I know. You sent it to me, so I framed it. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. He'll be a guest on tomorrow's show. Scott Fransky with the call on the Phillies Radio Network and WKOK.
3-2, swung on, hit well, center field. Going back on it, Ozuna, he looks up, and it is gone! There it goes, the first big league home run for Tyler Goodell.
Why do I have a feeling there's going to be several times in the next couple, 3 years where we're going to hear Scott Fransky say, that's the first career home run for, because they're going to have so many young players coming up. This has been quite a ride. I've enjoyed this.
What was the one stat, though, that really sticks out? Run differentials at minus 28?
Yeah.
So you kind of wonder, how long is this going to last? Not that we're complaining, and we're not. Absolutely not.
Well, the key is that you look, okay, the Phillies have won two in a row. They won seven of their last 10, so they're 24-17. They're a half game back of Washington right now in the race. The Pirates lost last night to the Braves. I don't know how you do that, but they did. And they're 7.5 games back, and they're 21-18. They're supposed to have the team. But the Phillies, while not scoring a lot, they only have 136 runs. They actually have scored 10 more runs than the Braves have this year, and the Braves' offense is considered to be anemic, right?
And their manager got fired.
Yes. They have the second lowest run total in terms of runs scored in the National League. And, in fact, the Phillies have the second lowest run total for runs scored in all of Major League Baseball. But let's take, for example, all right, my team, the Red Sox. Do you realize the Red Sox have 240 runs scored this year? 240 runs scored. They've scored 104 more runs than the Phillies have. And, by the way, they're having a great year. They're 25-16, 5 percentage points behind the Orioles in the East. They're playing 6-10 baseball, right? But the difference is that every once in a while, the Red Sox misfire. Why? Oh, I don't know. The Red Sox have given up 183 runs so far this year. It's a lot of runs. It's a lot of runs they've given up. Phillies have only given up 164. Your starting pitching's been really good. And you know what I like? The Phillies are 12-10 on the road. They're 12-7 at home. So they've shown the ability to win on the road. I'm telling you, they're like the team when you broadcast a game, and the longer they hang around, the more confident they get. The longer they hang around, they get more confident. The longer that you let them hang around, they get more. And suddenly you look around and say, I can't believe we're losing to these guys. Well, guess what? You're losing to them. And then you try to turn it on, and you can't. They're 24-17. Hey, they're playing almost 59 ball here, 585, right? The Phillies at the moment have the third best record in the National League. How about that? Third best record in the National League. And the seventh best record in baseball. How about that? On May the 19th, did you think any of you would hear those words? This has been fun. Phillies, I want to say they're off tonight, right?
Yep, they are.
Yeah, they're off tonight. Pirates have the Braves at 7:05 trying to salvage the series. Okay. Let's time now. Let's get to the serious part. And that is Greg Pickle, PennLive.com, and Patriot News. The concussion suit. Now, it's always interesting how things happen. Three Penn State players sue school and NCAA Big Ten. Well, then James Boyd and Eric Rabati both say, no, don't want to be a party to that. Where was the headline about that? Guess we already sold those papers. So Bobby Samuels is the only one left. Greg, what's your take on all of this?
Yeah, I've been spending most of the morning trying to run this down, Steve, first with James Boyd last night and then with Eric Rabiotti this morning and also Bobby Samuels. And, I mean, to me, it's clear that, you know, not just Penn State and not just, you know, the conferences and the NCAA that were named in the various suits filed on Tuesday, it's not going to stop there. I mean, this is an issue that is obviously being litigated for current players, both in the NFL and college football, and I would assume some other sports as well. And this is just going to, you know, it's just one piece of the puzzle. At some point, you know, everyone is going to put all their cards on the table in the concussion matter and who is responsible for what for past issues and who is responsible for what for future issues. I think we're pretty far ways away from that. But, you know, again, it's something that I think probably it's not terribly unexpected in hindsight. I mean, at some point, you know, former players feel like they should be compensated for some of the recurrent medical issues they're going through and for screening to detect those issues if they haven't had them yet, but may in down the future. And, you know, obviously there's not really a pool of money sitting out there anywhere for those players. You know, there's been obviously some discussions and proposed settlements to deal with current players, but you know, I think this is going to be one of the, you know, the start of a very long line of lawsuits that joins a pretty long line of lawsuits that came before them, because, you know, more and more people are starting to obviously become aware of the problems with concussions and the different sports, you know, it may or may not play a role in those. And, you know, everybody wants to be either compensated or, you know, taken care of in the future by, you know, whoever they think is responsible for whatever's wrong with them.
A concussion protocol, of course, concussions happen to be something where the research has really hit another gear in the last, I'll be fair, 20 years. I'd say the last 20 years. But how can you tell if the concussion issue happened in high school or, let's say, Bobby Samuels, his name is in there. Could it have happened in high school? Did it happen at Penn State? Did it happen when he played in the CFL? How can you tell?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem that a lot of these lawsuits are going to run into, is that on an individual basis, I don't really know. I mean, I'm not a scientist or a lawyer, but it's hard for me to believe that there's a way to pinpoint exactly when the issues began, unless you only played one level of football. But even that has its issues. You know, Pop Warner is being sued. You know, in Harrisburg, in Pennsylvania, the PIAA is being sued. So even those cases, you know, if someone's been playing football since they were five, you know, who's responsible for any issues they have? Is it the youth football league they played in? Is it, you know, the high school association that they played for? Is it the high school? Is it the conference they played in? I mean, it's really difficult, I would think, to narrow those down unless you only play football at one specific time period for one specific organization, and then maybe you'd have something to stand on. But, you know, if you played since you were five and your time as a football player incorporated, you know, numerous leagues and divisions and conferences and associations, it's really hard, I would think, to pin down, you know, where, you know, who is at fault, if anyone's even at fault. You know, that'll be decided by either a jury or a trial judge. So, yeah, it's interesting, Steve. You know, I can understand the reasoning behind it, but at the end of the day, I think you're looking more at a situation where these guys aren't maybe necessarily going to be compensated if somebody rolls in their favor by one group or another, but it's going to be a collective thing. Obviously, we've seen it already with current players, and then the next thing to figure out is what do you do with past players and who's responsible for that. So it's a very evolving field, and I'm sure that it's going to take quite some time to really come to any conclusion regarding all of these different suits.
Yeah, as I pointed out earlier, I remember a Penn State basketball player in 1977, after what I think was his third concussion, was told he would never be allowed to play here again, so he then transferred, and then he played 4 years someplace else. And I think to his credit, no issue after that. But he wouldn't let me. That was 97. Have you been able to get in touch with James Boyd, Eric Rivati, or Bobby Samuels?
Yeah, all three, James Boyd and Eric Rivati, reached out to us and a few other reporters. Robert Samuels is doing interviews with his lawyer and a PR firm for that group. So, yes, all three have talked.
Okay, and what have they told you?
Well, I mean, Rivati, you know, outright disagreed and really vehemently denied that, you know, what the suit claimed, that he had cognitive functioning issues. And, you know, there were a couple other things that the report said all three of these guys had dealt with. And, you know, he said in a statement that he did not have those issues. So he's really the only one I've seen come out and say that, you know, that James Boyd basically more or less said he didn't want to be involved. He didn't know Penn State was going to be sued, nor the Big Ten. So that really dropped his reason to be involved. And then when you talk about Bobby Samuels, you know, he says he does suffer from those things, from dizziness and headaches and, you know, the other things that we are now know are symptoms of concussions or at least some sort of mental issue is how he described it. So, you know, I think, you know, again, and the other problem is, you know, you read, you know, one study on concussions and they determine that, you know, X, Y, and Z are a factor in, you know, diagnosing the issues after concussions, and another one says A, B, and C are. So, again, if there's so much science and research involved in all of this that I think it's going to be really difficult to drill down, not only on, you know, who's, you know, in terms of the responsible party, but also, you know, which of the science is, you know, and how much of it can be used by any given player. I mean, whether it's factors that that person is experiencing and health issues that, you know, could also trigger these things, that's obviously going to be brought up. So, yeah, it's really some muddy waters to be traveling in at this point just because there's so much unknown.
Of the six remaining in this from six different schools, and I want to say five different conferences. Each one named the NCAA, each one named the respective conference. Only two named the school, Samuels being one of them. Did he explain why he named the school?
Yeah, so the New York Times sort of got to the bottom of that yesterday, basically saying that there's laws in, it's basically state laws that protect universities in certain litigation. So, you know, Vanderbilt, obviously being in Tennessee and then Penn State, we all know where that is. You know, the laws in those states allow them to be a party or party as a defendant in a suit like this. And it basically comes down to class action law. So Utah is involved, or a former player from Utah rather, but Utah isn't involved because class actions against the university aren't allowed. So really what it came down to, Steve, was that simply, you know, if the way, I guess the way the lawyers looked at it, the best I can interpret is that, you know, if the state law allowed for the school to be named the defendant, they were going to do it. And if the state law didn't, then they weren't going to do it. And we'll see how many more schools, excuse me, are named as defendants, you know, if they roll out these, weekly, I guess you could say, carpet of lawsuits as they claim they're going to.
I expect that the next batch will include someone from the ACC and someone from the Big 12 because they weren't in the initial batch. You've talked to enough people. Would that be your sense at some point the other Power 5 conferences show up in some form?
I would assume so. I mean, I think you'll just see blanket stuff coming out with schools, with conferences. I mean, I'm almost positive that if they really wanted to and they really had the resources and the pool that it seems like they do, that you could probably find, you know, a representative from every school and every conference in the country. I mean, I think that, you know, there's probably enough willing people with enough, you know, issues they believe are related to concussions that you could find, you know, a countless number of people. So, excuse me, I think that you will definitely see, you know, by the time this is all said and done, probably some sort of litigation against every conference, certainly, and, you know, a majority of the Division I schools probably wouldn't surprise me either.
For you as a reporter, what kind of learning curve have you gone through in the last 24 to 48 hours?
Oh, it's been enjoyable, Steve. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a lot of legalese involved with this, and certainly when you get into a situation where there's named plaintiffs that suddenly no longer want to be named plaintiffs, and you got to get to the bottom of that. And, you know, I think the biggest obstacle is attorney-client privilege. You know, you think about it when you watch Law and Order and how it applies to a criminal case, but it also applies to a civil case. So there's a lot of things that, you know, might answer some of the questions that are out there, you know, namely regarding why these guys thought, you know, they say they didn't think they were involved, and, you know, it might be a way to answer that, but the attorney can't really say too much because of attorney-client privilege. So, you know, I think that's probably been the most difficult part at this point, Steve, just trying to wade through the various legal parameters of the case and also try and get as much information in a situation where the law might not allow it at times.
There are 10 different attorneys, according to them, or law firms working on this. There's the primary one in Chicago that Edelson's a part of. Did you get in contact with Edelson at all through this? Because he's been pretty free. And what did he tell you?
You know, what you more or less would expect him to say. You know, they're trying to find as many plaintiffs, potential plaintiffs, and people that want to be involved with this to not only, you know, help their own cause, but help the, you know, the former players that maybe can't be involved in this or don't have the resources to be involved in this. So, you know, they're on the lookout for people like a lot of class action lawsuits. If you ever read the fine prints of those things, and I'm pretty sure everyone at one time or another has probably gotten an email about something they were involved in that, you know, they're eligible to apply for a class action. I mean, it's sort of a complicated process. You know, you got to start with sort of what I'll call a feeder firm or so, but excuse me, that's sort of regional to you and not the main firm. And then if that feeder firm thinks you're eligible and a candidate, you sort of get passed up the chain. So I'm not saying that's what happened in this instance, but that's how a lot of them work. And, you know, and I think that, you know, he and his law firm and the partners, at law firms that they're operating with are trying to, you know, as he told the New York Times, find money and resources for former players because current players were the ones that were involved in the NCAA settlement. So, you know, now they're on the lookout for ways to get money for former players as well to sort of combat these concussion issues and other mental and health issues they're having.
Okay. I sense you enjoy covering recruiting more. It's just
That's correct, Steve.
Yes, just wanted to make sure that we had the air cleared on that. That Greg Pickle would rather talk recruiting and games.
I don't. That's right. There's no muddy water involved with that.
no muddy water there. Greg, thanks. Appreciate the perspective very much. Terrific.
Always a pleasure, Steve. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Greg Pickle, PennLive.com, and the Patriot News. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Final half hour. There have been a lot of rumors that the Big Ten is going to go with Fox. What of ESPN? John Skipper of ESPN says directly, we want to continue the relationship. Jim Delaney's quote in all of this was rather interesting. I wouldn't talk about walking away from anybody or walking toward anybody. We're interested in having great partners that have great platforms that are interested in marketing and promotion, and the market will decide what will happen. ESPN's been a great partner. CBS has. Fox has. So it's a new day, and we approach it in that way. Wow. We'll talk about it next half hour and about the Phil Mickelson story. How does one get $931,000?
Mount Pleasant Mills, Dornsife, and Treverton turn first for news. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports Bozo of the Day. The membership at Muirfield in Scotland. Now, they can determine whomever they want to be in their club. They've lost the Open Championship now because they needed a two-thirds vote to change the charter to allow women. They didn't get two-thirds. Open, gone. And they've hosted 16 Open Championships. Last one was 3 years ago. Look, they can do whatever they want, and the RNA can do whatever they want. That's 2016, my God. I said, you weren't out there, but I mean, could we have had more fun having Jennifer Wakeman in our group? And Jen played really, really well. She's a good player. It's 2016. I can't buy into stuff like that. Now, the guy that won the last Open Championship in Muirfield is Phil Mickelson. And this is an interesting story. He is not going to be indicted, but his name certainly has come up. The Securities and Exchange Commission, a.k.a. the SEC, not the Southeastern Conference, alleged that golfer Phil Mickelson made $931,000 after purchasing stock on an insider trade tip from sports gambler Billy Walters. And then he used some of the money to pay back Walters, to whom he allegedly owed money. Today, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, said that Mickelson was not going to be criminally charged and that he has agreed to pay back an ill-gotten gain, which, including interest, is $1.03 million. I want all of you to close your eyes for a moment and imagine the ability to write that check. It's a pleasant thought, isn't it? To have the ability to write the check. We all know that Mickelson has been one of the top 10 athletic earners in sports for 10 years now, along with Tiger Woods. Woods has made more than Mickelson has. But the bottom line is 90% of what Mickelson makes is off the golf course. He's has great sponsors, does a lot of events, commercial endeavors, so forth. I mean, everything from Embril to ExxonMobil. Mickelson has been charged as a relief defendant, which is reserved for a person who profited without any evidence that they had knowledge concerning the origin of the illegal tip. Simply put, the money Mr. Mickelson made was not his to make, according to Andrew Kirschme, who is the director of the SEC's Enforcement Division. A spokesman for Mickelson issued a statement saying that the golfer had no desire to benefit from any transaction the SEC sees as questionable. He understands, deeply respects the high professional and ethical standards that the companies he represents expects, and thus they will cut the check and send it. He said he takes full responsibility for his actions. In other words, here's a great tip. Do this. And even you're surprised, like, oh my goodness, I made $931,000? No, would you expect it that you'd do okay, but not to that extent? I think that's what the SEC is saying about Mickelson, that he received a tip, thought, hey, this is great, but never even in his wildest dreams did he think he'd get that kind of return. I think that's essentially what they're saying here. Mickelson will have no further comment. Why does one sense that when we take the show to Oakmont, there will be a question or two about it? We'll check that out next month. Barclays, the bank that sponsors Mickelson, declined to comment. KPMG, another major sponsor, it says, look, they're cool. The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, said Mickelson spoke with Walters, whom he had placed bets with in 2012 about an upcoming spinoff dairy company, Dean Foods, was putting together. Based on a tip Walters had received, the SEC alleged, Walters told Mickelson to buy the stock. In other words, the inside tip is basically, okay, I think this is the way I'm reading it, is that, say the suit works for Dean Foods. He knows this merger is coming up, and he tells Sean and me, hey, look, hey, you know something you may want to invest in? Well, what's that? You ought to invest in Dean Foods. Oh, why is that? No, I just think it would be a good investment. You know, I think it could really work for you. Okay. So we invest in Dean Foods, and Sean is no longer working here because, you know, now he's off in, you know, his new home in the Bahamas. So I think that's essentially what they're saying, is that he's told about the stock, about the tip, thinking, oh, okay, great, okay, Dean Foods, okay, sure, I'll get involved. That, whoa, $931,000, hey, this is really great. So I think that's essentially what they're saying. And now it goes on with this. Walters, let's see. Walters told Mickelson to buy the stock. And months after buying 240,000 shares, according to a companion criminal case, Mickelson then repaid Walters using the Dean Foods money, the SEC alleged. So he didn't go out and buy 100 shares. He bought 240,000 shares of Dean Foods stock. That's a big number. Walters is charged with insider trading. He was arrested by the FBI late yesterday in Las Vegas. He was scheduled for arraignment today in Las Vegas, and he's supposed to make an appearance in U.S. District Court in New York June 1st. In a separate indictment, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, in conjunction with the SEC and the FBI, alleged that Walters' interaction with former chairman of Dean Foods, Thomas Davis, allowed him to make a profit of $32 million in stock trading while avoiding losses of $11 million. Davis, who had business relationship with Walters, allegedly received $1.1 million in loans from Walters that went unpaid. Davis is cooperating with the investigation. He's already pleaded guilty to charges that, in addition to those handed down to Walters, include perjury and obstruction of justice. Authorities were tipped off when they say Walters made $17.1 million in 2012 by trading on information that Dean Foods would spin off a company called White Wave Alpro. Through their investigation, the authorities revealed that Davis would frequently call Walters after he allegedly received inside information about the company, and Walters then would execute the trades. Walters is 69. Some say he is the most successful sports bettor in the history of the country. He grew up poor in Kentucky. He moved to Las Vegas in 1980. He parlayed his success betting on sports into the business world. He owns the Walters Group and Nature Development BV, which counts numerous car dealerships and high-end golf courses as assets. His attorney called him a true American success story. I don't know if he did that as he was walking into court, but a spokesman for Dean Foods, based in Dallas, said Thursday that Davis resigned from the company's board of directors last year and no longer is affiliated with the company. Dean Foods is cooperating with the investigation. I don't know about you. I've never heard of Dean Foods. Have you? I'm going to sense that's a no from Sean.
No, I thought the... I thought there was like a Dean's Dairy out in Western PA, like milk and dairy products or something. Yeah, it's something different.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's something different.
Okay. Now, I mean, it's food, so I assume the suit knows.
Now, I've seen like milk and Dean's dip in the store and stuff. Yeah, it's maybe that's what it is.
Oh, okay. I never even have seen that. According to indictments, when Walters and Davis would discuss Dean Foods, they would refer to the company by a code name. You know what the code name was? The Dallas Cowboys. Well, Mickelson has not been charged with a crime. He is not under federal investigation for the laundering case. And we all know what his resume is. 42 wins on the tour, World Golf Hall of Fame, 5 majors, 3 masters of PGA, and the British Open. Everybody knows Mickelson gambles. Everybody knows it. It's well publicized that when they go to a practice round, Mickelson throws around money in the practice round on bets as to how the practice round goes, you know, with his playing partners. I mean, he's always done that. And he'll do some wagering in the NBA and the Stanley Cup playoffs with other players, caddies, and so forth. You know, prominent fights. You know, he's always done that. He says he cut back on his gambling when his son Evan was born. What's the most successful bet Mickelson ever made? Okay? The most successful bet he ever made was in 2001 when he won $560,000 when he put money down in Vegas on the Baltimore Ravens to win their first ever Super Bowl in August of 2001 at 28-1 odds. How about that? So you must have put, what, $20,000 down, right? That's not right? $20,000 down for them to win. He is 28-1, so we get 560. Does that make sense? Is that math right? And again, you're talking about somebody who does not need the money. I've talked about, I realize this is a side note, I've mentioned this before, but when it comes to gambling, I found sports to be rather interesting as to putting up a moral stand 1 minute and then looking away the next. I've pointed out the London NFL games. You know, Las Vegas has gambling. Yes, they do. Guess what? The entire country of England has gambling. It's okay to play games in London, but you're like, Las Vegas, I don't know. Adam Silver, about a year and a half ago, put out his column, an op-ed in the New York Times about, you know, maybe we ought to be open to this and take a look at it. I've maintained for a long time, sports has become such a money grab. Why is the NFL playing a game in China, for example, this year? Because they're trying to open up the market. They can open up the market to China, get people interested. They can make, oh, voila, more money. That's what it's all about. Well, if I've maintained for years that the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and the NFL would all embrace sportsbook once they figured out a way where they would make significant amounts of money from it. Since they don't quite have that way yet, they'll oppose it. And something I started in August, and it did a lot of on this show over the last 9 months, not so much the last 2 months, FanDuel and DraftKings. FanDuel and DraftKings, no matter what you say, is gambling. It may be glorified fantasy, but it's still gambling. Again, I'm making no moral stand on this. I'm just giving you facts. But FanDuel and DraftKings, based on the 2006 internet bill, is legal across the country. Some states have now stepped in and said, no, not in our state. Started with Nevada and has worked its way around. New York is the latest case with it. Pennsylvania has looked into it. But FanDuel DraftKings was red hot. The first month of the NFL season and the first month of the college football season, how many FanDuel and DraftKings commercials did you see?
Oh, you couldn't get away from them.
And one or the other had a relationship legally and financially with Major League Baseball, the PGA Tour, the NHL, the NBA, NFL, I'm not quite sure. But they did, and everything was legal, up and up, up front, the whole deal.
Actually, here on WKOK for Phillies on Deck, DraftKings sponsors pregame show.
Right. And again, it goes back to my point. The reason I bring up FanDuel and DraftKings is that it shows me that if they think they can profit from it, and it's considered to be legal, they will do it. That's why I brought FanDuel DraftKings up, because if they can profit from being involved in sportsbook, they will do it. I really believe that. Which then, you know, and the reason the Mickelson thing is because, of course, it is tied to gambling. You try to give slices of advice to your students as you teach them. I've always talked to them about the gambling part of it, and I'll wrap it up in a moment and tell you that little slice of advice I tried to give them. They can ignore it if they wish. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you thought 100 years in business was impressive, SMC is going to show you 101 is even more spectacular. During the month of May, Sunbury Motors Ford is going to sell 101 new Fords by discounting every new Ford to the lowest price possible. Plus, give you more for your trade. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 42 new Escapes starting at $18,880. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 85 new F-150s starting at $23,749.
Saving you up to $11,400.
SMC is where you want to be if you want 0% financing for 72 months on Focuses, Fusions, Edges, Escapes, and Explorers. Now is the time to take advantage of Sunbury Motors' goal to sell 101 new Fords in May. SMC's goal is your gain. 101 vehicles sold means you'll save more money than ever before. Sunbury Motors and the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 101 years.
Last night, the White Sox turned their second triple play of the year. Now, this is what I would have picked for my play-by-play call of the day. I know the Phillies call by Scott Francis was great. Scott's on tomorrow's show. But when the triple play was executed, you know what the guy said? He said, "That triple play brought to you by Xfinity." Now, I have to give, that has to be the sales executive of the year, to sell triple plays to Xfinity, to convince them that there might be a few of them. You got to be really good to sell triple plays as a sponsorship.
Here we go. We got the triple play call from last night. Here we go.
He deals. Listen to this. Springer is swinging a ground ball to third. Steps on the bag at third to second for two. On the first, triple play. We turn a triple play. Triple plays are brought to you by Xfinity. How about that one?
I mean, I'm telling you. You have to be the greatest salesperson on the planet to sell a triple play sponsorship. You got to be really good.
Ed Farmer, WLS Chicago. That's so, it's like he expected it.
That was good. Gambling. I mentioned gambling and what I tell my students. I told my students, I said, look, you want to gamble, gamble. It's up to you. It's your life. It's your money. Right? I'm not here to moralize and tell you what to do. So, but I will give you a piece of advice. Do not gamble on the sport you announce or cover. I said, and here's the reason why. If it goes wrong, your analysis of whatever it happens to be is going to be, I think, has a good chance of being unduly harsh and unrealistic because you're angry. Conversely, in the sport you're covering or the team you're covering, if they win and you win, same thing's going to happen. Your analysis is going to be unduly euphoric and not realistic, and you're not providing a service to the people who rely on what you're writing or announcing. They want good, solid, honest pro and con analysis. I said, if you want to gamble on something else, some others, whatever. I said, well, you don't have a vested working interest in it. I said, fine. But if you have a vested working interest in it, I said, you need to stay as neutral as possible.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies, News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.